Visiting a dark diamond in the sky, this week on Planetary Radio. Welcome, I'm Matt Kaplan of the Planetary Society, with more of a human adventure across our solar system and beyond. After traveling across much of our inner solar system, Hayabusa 2 is now a hair's breadth from asteroid Ryugu. It won't be long before the spacecraft touches down on this diamond-shaped mystery. Before it does, it will release a tiny German and French lander called Mascot. We'll talk with Hitoshi Kuninaka, leader of the Hayabusa 2 mission for the Japanese Space Agency. Mars is almost close enough to touch. Okay, not quite, but Bruce Betts is ready to share the great view with us, and this week's brand new space trivia contest has an extended deadline for those of you who never hear us in time to enter. We begin with senior editor Emily Lakdawalla, who has just accepted a big new job at the Planetary Society. Welcome back, Emily. Tell us about this big new task that you've taken on.
You're speaking to the new editor of the Planetary Report. Now, some of the people listening to this show may not be familiar with the Planetary Report, but it's actually a 40-year-old magazine that circulates to about 50,000 people. It's the member magazine for the Planetary Society. It was started in 1980 by Carl Sagan. It was developed by Charlene Anderson, who would later mentor a young planetary science graduate into a science writer. I'm talking about me, of course. And then it was nurtured into its present state by Jennifer Vaughn, who's now our chief operating officer, and Donna Stevens, who retired last month. It's an honor to be put at the helm of this magazine with such a legacy. It contains a lot of writing by luminaries like Carl Sagan, but also lots of engineers and scientists and astronauts and futurists and space artists. I'm looking forward to carrying its tradition on into the future and maybe bringing it into a little closer alignment with what we do on the web and having the website be influenced by the magazine as well.
Yeah. I mean, how do you build on this kind of success? Can you be more specific about what you hope to do with the magazine?
Well, the magazine has always featured the voices of the people actually performing the exploration of our solar system and the universe beyond. And I don't plan to change that. I think it's one of the wonderful things that the Planetary Society does, connecting the active space explorers with the armchair space explorers, the people who enjoy the fruits of planetary exploration so much. So we will continue to do that. The pages will continue to inform people about what the Planetary Society is doing, and I will continue to feature amazing photos. I'll probably start featuring more of the particular kinds of photos I like, which are ones that are dug out of planetary image archives by amateur image processors. So I hope to feature more of those people in the pages. I also have been looking at the catalog of what the Planetary Report, the subject matter that it's featured in the last several years, and I found a few subjects that have gone maybe a little neglected. So I'm going to be featuring some articles on some neglected planets and places in the near future.
Well, as a member of the Society, as well as an employee, I always look forward to a new edition of the Planetary Report, and I can't wait to see what this new era will bring us, Emily. Thank you for taking it on. When will we see that new issue, we members?
So my first issue will be the September Equinox issue, and I can tell you now that it's going to feature articles on new missions to explore Mercury and the Moon.
Very much something to look forward to. And you can learn more, of course, at planetary.org. Thanks, Emily. We'll continue to talk to you about other things around the solar system as well, I hope.
Yes, indeed.
That's Planetary Society Senior Editor Emily Lakdawalla. And that title now includes her leadership of the Planetary Report. We're moments away from talking with Hitoshi Kuninaka, leader of the Hayabusa 2 mission. Remember Hayabusa? I started calling it the little spacecraft that could. The Japanese mission to asteroid Itokawa faced and overcame challenge after challenge, finally returning a tiny sample of that space rock to Earth. JAXA, the Japanese Space Agency, and its Institute of Space and Astronautical Science learned a lot from that experience. Now Hayabusa 2 is almost ready to descend to asteroid Ryugu. Hitoshi Kuninaka leads the mission. Professor Kuninaka is also an expert in electric propulsion and plasma engineering and has been deeply involved in development of the ion engines that have driven both Hayabusa explorers across the solar system. He was in Pasadena, California a few days ago for COSPAR, the International Committee on Space Research 2018 Scientific Assembly. He found time in a very busy schedule to spend a few minutes with me for Planetary Radio.
It's my pleasure to talk in these programs.
It is our great pleasure and honor to have you as a guest on Planetary Radio. So again, thank you very much for taking a few moments out of your time here in Southern California to join us. Hayabusa 2 is now 20 kilometers, maybe 12 and a half miles.
That's right.
From your target, asteroid Ryugu. It seems to be going marvelously, absolutely perfectly. You must be very proud of your mission.
Thank you very much. But from now on, we will start the proximity operation, that is the space exploration. And then so that we are very nervous to go the safety, we can do the safety operation or not. So that, all of staff, Hayabusa 2 team, has very keen to access to the such a phase. I'm very proud of them.
You have a great right to be, and your mission has attracted worldwide attention. It has been in all of the newspapers here in California, I know, and around the world. You probably have seen Dr. Brian May's stereoscopic images.
We are very happy, so that a lot of people interested in our space missions. And Brian May make a 3D stereo image. We are very proud of it.
And some of my colleagues at the Planetary Society have also been writing about the mission since before your launch. In fact, even just recently, Jason Davis, he had a piece on July 5th about sample return, which I hope we can talk about in a moment or two, since that is the great goal of this mission. But as recently as July 11th, he included in a blog post at planetary.org some of these utterly, I will say it again, spectacular images that are already being returned. What's ahead of us here? You'll be moving in closer soon, right?
Yes, so that present state, we stay the present position, 20 kilometers apart from the target asteroid. And then so we take a lot of data using the onboard camera and IR instrument. July and August, we get a lot of information about asteroid Ryugu. And then summarizing the all of data, we will determine the landing location. We select the site of the to deliver, dispatch our separation robotics. And then so that the whole of the identification and determination in the next phase, we will move on to the next phase, that is the proximity operation.
And before we go on, you mentioned an IR instrument, and that's an infrared spectrometer, I think, that you're carrying as one of the instruments on the spacecraft.
Yes.
You're closing into what the next step is, I think, 5 kilometers from the asteroid?
Yes, before the real touchdown operation, we try to descent operation, so to approach to the vicinity of the asteroid to get the more detailed image.
When will the spacecraft begin operating autonomously? Because I know that as you get closer to the asteroid, like many missions now, that 40-minute light travel time between us and Ryugu, 300 million kilometers away, you really have to rely on your spacecraft's intelligence.
So the previous mission, Hayabusa 1 mission, we have a lot of the failure in the space operation. In the case of the Hayabusa 1, we missed the release of the projectile as at the moment of the touchdown. In that result, so collected sample is a very tiny one, so several milligram or a microgram.
But it worked. You made it back with that very small sample.
That's right. Yeah. So that's a kind of the malfunction. We do not make a computer system so precisely. Based on that, the lessons learned in the Hayabusa 2 case, we executed a lot of the simulation in the computer simulation and the machine interface simulation. And in that sense, we executed a lot of the preparation for the exact touchdown operation.
I can tell you that all of us at the Planetary Society, as we followed Hayabusa 1, we really felt it was a heroic mission because it did face so many problems. And yet, you made it back with a sample. What has changed? You had all of that data from that first mission. I know you made a number of improvements to Hayabusa 2.
Yes, I am an engineer of the electric propulsion in the ion engine system. So I took charge of the development and operation of the ion engine dedicated for Hayabusa 1 and 2. During the operation of Hayabusa 1, we experienced a lot of the malfunction in space. So especially for the ion engine, we had a lot of the interruption of the operation using the ion engine. Our system was not sophisticated, so Hayabusa 2 is not decided. We are focusing on the future application, not Hayabusa 2. In case of the Hayabusa 1 ion engine, thrust force is 8 mN. Thrust force is 8 mN. The next challenge, we made 10 mN.
So 25% increase,
yes,
in your thrust.
That's right. That's, yeah, right. Improved one. Mm-hmm. And then, so in that sense, we prepare for our ion engine technology, focusing the future mission. And then after the Hayabusa 1 termination, Japanese government decided to go to the next asteroid sample return mission, that is Hayabusa 2. And then from the 2011, we applied the new improved ion engine system to Hayabusa 2. Based on the lessons learned of the Hayabusa 1, inbound journey from Earth to target asteroid from 2014 to 2018 this year. Mm-hmm. So these 3.5 years, so that the perfect operation for the ion engine, so that no interruption of the operation in space.
I'd like to hear more about some of what you are also carrying on the spacecraft. In particular, these little rovers that are called Minerva 2.
Minerva 2 and the mascot.
Yes. Tell us about Minerva 2, first of all.
Original Minerva 1, dedicated for Hayabusa 1 mission, we released the Minerva robotics from the spacecraft, but unfortunately, we failed to land on the surface of the asteroid Itokawa. At that moment of the release, we take only the one picture from the mothership Hayabusa, but the Minerva cannot reach to the surface of the asteroid. In the Hayabusa 2, so we have a next trial, so we install the three Minerva 2. Next time opportunity, we want to succeed the landing operation of the Minerva 2.
And these are actually, they've been called rovers, but they're actually more hoppers, right?
Yeah, that's right. Very low gravitational field environment, so that they can move by hopping manners.
Yeah. How will you take material from the surface where you go, actually from under the surface? You have an impactor. Can you talk about how that will work?
One of the lessons learned of the Hayabusa 1 mission, the collected surface material is affected by space weathering effect. Under the ground, we may have very fresh material. The Hayabusa 2 mission, we install the impactor. We call the small carry-on impactor. It installs the chemical powders. Once we explode chemical reaction, we accelerate the kappa pellet.
It's almost like an explosion firing a bullet or a shell into the surface. You make a little crater.
Yeah, that's right.
And is it at that moment that the sample material is blown up into the collector?
No. So that is a relatively dangerous operation. And then so
you don't want to be too close.
Yes. So then once impactor was separated from the mothership Hayabusa 2, it will take escape maneuver to go to the another side of the asteroid. And then several tens of minutes later, impactor automatically explode. At that moment, maybe a lot of the fragment will be scattered around environment. Some of the fragment may have a very high velocity. So once we have a collision, so we have a very serious phenomena. So that in order to avoid such kind of the phenomena, so a spacecraft takes the escape maneuver. Tens day later, fragment will be disappeared. And then so spacecraft come back to the original position, and then so it will search the new crater, and we will take another touchdown operation vicinity of the new craters.
So all of this is still ahead of us, and the greatest feat that is still ahead of us is 10 days after this impact, collection of the sample, and then soon after you begin the return trip to Earth?
Yes, proximity operation of Hayabusa will take the 1.5 years. During that proximity operation, we have a 2 months conjunction time frame. Mm, so mm-hmm. in that time frame, we cannot communicate with the spacecraft. So 2 months rest. First of all, this year, 2018, we want to try to execute 2 touchdown operation. Uh-huh. And then next year, we will try to the impact operation. And then after that, we will try the third trial of the touchdown. And then end of 2019, spacecraft leave for Earth.
And then the return capsule, reentry capsule, comes down in Australia, is collected. What happens with that sample material after that? Does it go to a lab in Japan?
We will take the same manner of the Hayabusa mission. And first of all, we will search the landing position of the capsule. We fly to there by helicopter, helibomb mm-hmm. mission. And then so we will pick up the returned capsule. So after that, we will hire the business jet. And then from Umera, we will take the direct flight from Australia to Haneda.
And there to enter into, I'm sure, a very clean lab.
Yes, that's right.
To begin to examine this material. What are the scientists hoping to discover? Because I know that because of the type of asteroid this is, a type C asteroid.
That's right.
They are hoping that it will have some very, very interesting materials.
Yeah. This asteroid, Ryugu, is classified to C-type asteroid. C means the carbonaceous chondrite type asteroid. So the scientists thinking about the it contains the water or an organic material. These are the expected. We are now making the new curation facility in Sagamihara, Japan to adapt the Ryugu materials. Scientists want to take a signal of the water or an organic material from the collected sample.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting because we really are looking back into the past of our solar system, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to conditions that may have led to life on Earth. Very exciting.
That's right. That's right. Asteroid is the fossil of the solar system.
So a fossil, yes. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
The Earth material is a lot of the weathering and the temperature effect, so that the whole of the material is changed. So asteroid and a comet in the solar system kept in the ancient situation of the solar system.
Yeah. How important is international partnership or collaboration in achieving these?
That's a very, very important factor. So JAXA is the daughter partner, minor partner. In the other case, with a major integrator or major players of that space mission. In the minor partner case, we deliver small component or separation robotics to the another space agency. In the opposite case, we receive the component from the international agencies, and then so we bring the such device to the target. That is a collaboration. In that case, we have a mutual benefit to the each countries. If we promote such kind of the international collaboration, we can make a good relationship between two countries or many countries, not only space topics but also whole kind of the issues.
Yes.
That is the final goal, I believe.
Just one other question, a somewhat personal one. You've said that exploration is in the human heart. Does that help to drive your work on this mission and the other missions that are upcoming?
From now on, JAXA, not only JAXA, but also whole of the international, will go to the next step of the space exploration program. It will stimulate us and then to encourage the company's activity and accelerate technology advancement. Space exploration will stimulate human being, I believe.
But for you personally, you find it stimulating?
So
you said
I get the
it's in your heart, you said.
I get the very senior person but the president state I take the director general of the ISAS of the JAXA. So we want to encourage our staff of ISAS people and then expand this passion to the Japanese community and the worldwide.
Thank you again very much. It has truly been an honor to speak to you. All of us wish you the greatest of continued success with Hayabusa 2. We look forward to the return of those samples and the great science ahead.
Thank you very much. For finally, I want to say, may the force be with us.
Yes, one would hope. Hayabusa 2 project manager Hitoshi Kuninaka on Planetary Radio. There's a whole lot more of my conversation with Professor Kuninaka in this week's podcast version at planetary.org/radio. And that's where you'll also hear a great conversation with Hans-Jörg Dietes, a leader of the German Aerospace Center, or DLR. Working with French partners, they've put that tiny lander called Mascot on Hayabusa 2. I'll be back with Bruce Betts in this week's What's Up after the break.
Where did we come from? Are we alone in the cosmos? These are the questions at the core of our existence. And the secrets of the universe are out there, waiting to be discovered. But to find them, we have to go into space. We have to explore. This endeavor unites us. Space exploration truly brings out the best in us, encouraging people from all walks of life to work together to achieve a common goal, to know the cosmos and our place within it. This is why the Planetary Society exists. Our mission is to give you the power to advance space science and exploration. With your support, we sponsor innovative space technologies, inspire curious minds, and advocate for our future in space. We are the Planetary Society. Join us.
Time for What's Up on Planetary Radio. The chief scientist for the Planetary Society is on the line once again. That's Bruce Betts. Welcome back. Very, very exciting week, isn't it?
It is. The time has come. I've been talking about it, but now it's here. Mars opposition on July 27th, opposite side of the Earth from the Sun, and closest approach on July 31st. This is the closest approach since 2003, so therefore it'll be brighter and bigger than it has been, brighter than everything in the every natural thing anyway in the night sky, except for the Moon and Venus, which is also up. So we got that going on. You can learn lots of details and all about oppositions and close approaches on our website, planetary.org, where I've got a blog talking all about the Mars opposition and closest approach, what else you can see. But there's also a total lunar eclipse, which I also talk about in the blog. And that occurs for those of you in most of Europe, Africa, Western and Central Asia, the Indian Ocean, and Western Australia. So not us. Sorry, Matt. Unless you want a road trip.
I'm always ready for a road trip.
But here's what's even super cooler is it'll be near bright Mars in the sky. So you'll have reddish Moon and reddish Mars hanging out near each other in the sky, which is not coincidental, as you can find out in my blog. And then also, so Mars is rising at opposition. It's rising around sunset and setting around sunrise. And so Mars is in the east in the early evening. And then if you just swing across the sky, you'll see Saturn looking kind of bright and yellowish. And then farther over, Jupiter, super bright, usually brighter than Mars, but not right now. And then Venus, even brighter over in the west. And they nicely fall along a line, proving once again that we orbit in a relatively flat solar system in terms of the big object orbits. Whew, it's exciting, man. It's really exciting. Go out there and look up, everyone.
And Bruce's blog that he mentioned, this nice little Q&A, you can find it, of course, at planetary.org, where all of our great blog posts are.
Awesome. We move on to This Week in Space History, 1971. Astronauts first drive a car on the moon with Apollo 15 lunar roving vehicle, first one.
Dune buggy.
1984, Svetlana Savitskaya became the first woman to spacewalk.
Huh, I'll be darned. Okay.
Move on to random space fact! Sorry, I'm kind of excited today. At closest approach for the 2018 opposition, Mars will be 24.31 arc seconds in diameter. Now, ever since 2003, every opposition, we get the Mars hoax pops up saying the Mars will be as big as the full moon, which of course is very, very wrong. But let's figure out how wrong. The full moon has an angular diameter of about half a degree or 1800 arc seconds. So for the 2018 close approach, the full moon will be about 74 times larger in diameter than the maximum Mars disk size.
Yeah, and you addressed this in that blog post as well, which I was glad to see.
It's so true. All right, we move on to the trivia contest, still talking about Mars, and in this case, the reason why its brightness varies so much from one opposition to another. What is the eccentricity of the Mars orbit, which defines how non-circular it is, basically? How do we do, Matt?
I'm going to go straight to our winner, because you already told me that he had this right, because I'm excited. He's in my old hometown, the place where I lived for 30 years or so, and that's Long Beach, California. Lucas Sabat, or Sabate, he didn't give us the pronunciation, but Lucas said that this eccentricity is 0.0934, which means what?
For those who have taken your analytical geometry, trigonometry kind of stuff, it's how much is your lips squished, to use the non-technical term. So how much is your circle squished? And so if you're not squished, you have an eccentricity of zero, and the farther you get from zero, the more squishy it is. And Mars has a much higher eccentricity than Earth, for example.
Well, Lucas, congratulations. You're going to get that Planetary Radio t-shirt and a 200-point iTelescope.net astronomy account. Russell Frizzell in Olympia, Washington, along with a bunch of other people, including Zoe Reinertz in Germany and Robert Laporta in Connecticut, they said that the eccentricity of Mars's orbit was a clue for Kepler to the natural laws of planetary motion. In other words, they helped him figure out that stuff goes around other stuff in ellipses.
All right. Way to go, Mars. Way to help Kepler get a clue.
With that, we are ready to start a new one.
All right. Can't get enough Mars Close Approach. When will be the next Mars Close Approach when Mars is closer to Earth than in the 2018 Close Approach? When will Mars next be closer to Earth than in 2018? Go to planetary.org/radio contest.
And I want to be kind this week to all of the people who hear this program too late to enter the contest. We'll call this an experiment. Maybe we'll make it a regular thing, maybe not. But since some of you will probably be hearing about the Mars opposition and a close approach and the eclipse after it happens, we're going to give you more time to enter the contest this week. How about we move the deadline out 2 weeks? That means that you will need to get us your entry by Wednesday, August 8th at 8 a.m. Pacific time, and you will have a chance to win a Planetary Radio t-shirt that you can check out at chopshopstore.com. That's where the Planetary Society store is. You can see all our cool stuff. And a 200-point iTelescope.net account from that worldwide network of telescopes that anybody can use. 200-point account is worth a couple hundred bucks U.S. They have a brand new planning tool that you can see on their site. It's very cool. It helps everybody find lots of beautiful objects in the night sky and then examine them with the telescopes that are part of the network. So good on you, iTelescope.
Cool.
And with that, I think we're done.
All right, everybody. Go out there, look up the night sky, and think, if you put a t-shirt on a tank, does it become a tank top? Thank you.
Oh, God.
Just kind of proud of that one.
I am speechless. I have nothing to add to this one.
Yes.
Except that a tank top would be wise to wear currently across much of the United States and the world. So stay cool, Bruce, and all the rest of you as well. Planetary Radio is produced by the Planetary Society of Pasadena, California, and is made possible by its members around the world. Mary Liz Bender is our associate producer. Josh Doyle composed our theme, which was arranged and performed by Peter Schlosser. I'm Matt Kaplan, at Astro.